You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 19 May. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud all across the interwebs. On the show today, Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss, markets surging. Keith McLachlan from Alpha Asset Management on the gold trade, and Johan Els, Chief Economist, Old Mutual. Will we get another 1% rate cut from our governor on Thursday? Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Steinhoff Son resigns with immediate effect. Business Day reporting Airport Company SA may need 11 billion rand as COVID-19 continues to bite. Overnight, US markets very strong. S&P up 3.2, Nasdaq 2.5%. Asia, Australia all around 2% green. Commodities a little down this morning after their massive run of yesterday. ZAR 18.36, and our overnight markets are calling for a top 40 about 0.7% higher at the open.
MoneyWeb Now on the money, also available on podcast.
Chatting with Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss. Gary, morning, a massive day on our markets yesterday. Everything surging. Commodities, the clear out and out winner. Resi just having a storming day on the back of PGMs, oil, Brent, and West Texas all just going crazy. I mean, it was no worries in the world by this market Monday. What's driving these commodity prices? Is it a hope that everything's fine and we'll be back to buying cars and building?
It has grown. So if you look at what happened over the weekend, we really actually got three pieces of very positive news. So the first was that obviously over the weekend Jay Powell spoke just around the capacity of the Fed still to expand its balance sheet to really do whatever is necessary and pump a lot of liquidity into the system. Now that's always going to be positive for commodity prices and stocks, really positive for any hard asset. Because essentially it makes us start to assume that there could potentially be some weakness in the dollar, given all this new money coming into the system, and there's essentially a flight to hard assets, whether it's stocks, property, or commodities. So that could definitely have lifted commodity prices. On the other hand, we've obviously got continuing opening up of developed economies. We've seen Europe, kind of proceeding with a gradual easing of lockdown conditions, and that they haven't seen a massive spike in infection rates, and I think that's also remarkable against some optimism. And then, of course, we've got Moderna, who's in the early stages of the vaccine, and there's certainly, I think, people getting fairly excited about the prospect of a vaccine towards the end of the year, early next year, also just helping to lift sentiment.
And part of it, and I mean, part of the recovery, at the moment we've got central banks and the like the world over pumping stimulus into the economy, governments as well, Germany throwing a third of their GDP as stimulus. One of the post-COVID implications, I imagine, is going to be infrastructure as well. That's a nice, easy win. It gets employment going, it's good for economies because infrastructure is always useful, and that obviously also plays into the commodity space, and we might not be seeing it yet, but if the market's looking down the road, they're seeing this as a potential.
Yeah, so I'll actually tweet it after the show, just it's a chart of basically all the commodities overlaid for the year. And you'll see that the base metals have been fairly resilient, and the kind of things that you'd expect in manufacturing and infrastructure spending, the likes of iron ore, so you can look at others, the Singapore iron ore, Dalian iron ore, they've really, throughout the whole pandemic, they've been fluctuating between, around $80 a ton up to, at the moment, we're sitting at about $93 a ton. It's been a very range-bound commodity at the moment, and I think that, as you say, it's people looking through the initial impact of the coronavirus and saying, eventually we are going to use these commodities again, and this is potentially just, iron ore doesn't necessarily suffer from the same problems that the oil market has suffered from, where you run out of places to store it. You can always pile it all up in fields if you have to, and that's why I think the commodity has been a lot more resilient than some of the others.
MassMart came out with an update yesterday. It was the 29 March, so it's simply just 2 days of the lockdown. And in that period, things were okay. But post that, I mean, no surprises that they're really struggling. No general merchandise in the first 5 weeks. Still no alcohol, tobacco sales. Their DIY hardware section, giving us a glimpse of just how tough it is for your more general sort of retailers. We get the clicks and the shop rights and the like, but these guys really, really on the back foot.
Absolutely. We chatted about the likes of the groceries and how even in a very difficult environment, this is not just a boon for groceries, and you can't expect ShopRite and Pick and Pay to do extremely well just because they maintain that they're open. They still have, large sections cordoned off. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the like MassMart, I mean, this is a business that, it would have got this little bump as people, prepared for lockdown and, flooded the liquor sections and, for the 2 days that they were open. But when you have the e-commerce banned and they can't sell things online, when you have stores closed for this period of time, of course it's going to have a massive impact on sales. And really it comes down to survivability for these companies. We still kind of, as markets get optimistic about a potential recovery, we've got to kind of sometimes look in the mirror and just look at the massive economic damage that's being done. And I think that's what financial markets certainly are trying to balance at the moment. They're looking at the numbers, they're expecting terrible numbers from these companies, but they're trying to price in what is going to come as lockdowns ease. But that's very, very uncertain and very, very difficult, and it leads to huge volatility in the company share price.
Here's the tricky question for your day. Zoom, the video service, now worth more than the seven largest U.S. listed airlines, was doing the rounds on the Twitters yesterday. Which side of that trade would you be? Would you be looking at airlines, or would you rather say, you know what, it's a long time before they work, give me the Zoom?
Very good question. So, it's a tricky question. It's also, if you look at, the likes of Warren Buffett, I mean, selling down, huge portions of United, Delta, Southwest, and American Airlines, taking a loss for like the legendary value and therefore getting out of airlines. We've seen it across the board that, people have been exiting airlines. We saw Ryanair coming out yesterday as well, just saying that they're going to bring, I think it's about 40% of their planes back on stream. You've seen, some speculation that certain airlines will have to increase the number of flights that they're making just to keep the passenger numbers down as well. So that's kind of almost giving a lift to the likes of Boeing and Airbus. So it's a very, very tricky industry, but I think you still have to remain very, very, very cautious around airlines. Our preferred play in the aerospace sector is actually Lockheed Martin, which is a defense contractor rather than a direct passenger mm-hmm. airline, because I think airlines are going to be in a very, very tough space for the foreseeable future. As for Zoom, this was the app that everyone went to. It was the darling of the lockdown, as people trying to move into use online communication tools. The share price has gone pretty ballistic, and there are security concerns about it as well. So when you kind of look at the valuations of something like Zoom, you've got to be concerned. And I think it's the caution that I'd have around Zoom at the moment is that it's got a brand. Yes, brand is worth a lot. Community in tech companies is incredibly important. And they clearly have a very captive audience, and they've got a lot of users moving towards their platform. But they've got very, very well-established competitors in the market. You've got Google launching things like Google Meet. You've obviously got Microsoft Teams. You've got a lot of other very established players that you can potentially get access to the same kind of product offering, just with a lot more established player, with a lot stronger balance sheet and with better earnings profile. So, while we don't hold Zoom in portfolios, we do hold Microsoft in portfolios, and it's done very well for us. Yeah. So that's kind of the way that I would rather play it. Zoom at the moment probably a little bit too speculative and a little bit too expensive just for our mandate.
Yeah, so you dodged that question and basically said to me, Lockheed Martin, I like that, not fan of Zoom necessarily, too much risk, and the airlines, tough being an airline right now. That was Gary Boyson, Rand Swiss. Gent, really appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. also available on podcast.
Keith McLachlan is an asset manager, at Alpha Asset Management, where he's a fund manager. Keith, gold was selling off during the May sell-off along with everything else, but it's back and it's doing its thing as a safe asset, a safe haven in tough times. You're not a gold bug, but over the years I've known you, you've bought some gold miners, and you're back in that space again as a security for your portfolio.
Absolutely. So the way I view gold is effectively an investment of last resort. When you look around the world and all asset classes look questionable, you know, equity valuations are high, the downside risk is material, and particularly even cash becomes a risky or unviable option because interest rates are low, and which currency? You start to look around the world and go, well, what do you do? Where do you put the capital? Because capital has to be parked somewhere. So as an investment of last resort, it actually becomes a very attractive capital parking position when all hell breaks loose.
And you're looking at particular gold stocks, AngloGold Ashanti and the like, rather than perhaps a gold ETF or the sort of shiny Krugerrands you need to hide in your garden?
Well, it depends which way you take it from. So the gold stocks have leveraged the Fed. They effectively have an embedded free option on the gold price because of their fixed cost, but they leverage exposure to the spot price movements, and particularly across the currency. But they come with operational risk, and they come with currency risk. Now, within an equity portfolio, one can allocate smaller positions to gold stocks to achieve a larger, effectively levered beta position to the gold sector. But the fixed commodity, whereas it doesn't offer you leverage, it does offer you the safety of actually being gold with zero operational risk. So yes, you know, in the gold sector and the large cap, we prefer AngloGold Ashanti. In the small cap sector, we like Pan-African Resources. And depending on what the portfolio is, and allocation to physical also works as well.
And the risk here in this trade, I suppose, is broadly two things. One is that vaccine. We saw reports overnight out of the U.S. around a vaccine moving into second stage of trials. That took a little bit of shine off. And the second, of course, is ZAR strength, because, you know, these companies are selling in U.S. dollars, but much of their costs are in ZAR, although AngloGold Ashanti, bit of a global company. But those are broadly the two risks to the trade.
Well, I add a third one, and that's interest rates start to be hiked around the world, because obviously interest rates make cash accounts and other investments far more attractive, and they increase the opportunity cost of holding gold that effectively has a slightly negative interest rate because of holding costs. Now, I don't see a world where interest rates are going to rise dramatically. The Fed has used a lot of its spare capacity in lowering interest rates, and if anything, negative interest rates that started as a trend a number of years ago are actually just spreading. So we might be shifting into a negative interest rate world, particularly when the world's risk-free rate is hovering around zero in America. So you're absolutely right in terms of currency risk from a South African investor perspective, which is obviously US dollars are. But from a global perspective, interest rates are absolutely a key thing to watch, in my opinion. And then, longer term, if there's a vaccine and the world comes back online and lockdown opens up, sure, that may take some of the shine off gold, pun totally intended. but it's probably more a function of actually in the long term, interest rates, inflation, and currency. I would say those sort of things are far more important. But don't forget, in the background, we've got a massive geopolitical tension between America and China that may offset any kind of windfall from a vaccine with who knows what coming up between the two countries.
Yeah, that's a fair point. There's actually a lot out there that is playing to it. It's the geopolitical, the low interest rates. There's a bunch playing for gold right now. AngloGold Ashanti, Pan-African Resources, those are the two stocks. Keith McLachlan, Alpha Asset Management, really appreciate the time this morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Johan Elsner, Chief Economist at Old Mutual. We've got an MPC meeting, Monetary Policy Committee of the Reserve Bank, tomorrow and Thursday. Announcement Thursday afternoon. Johan, morning. Thanks for your time. I'm imagining a rate cut is pretty much a certainty in the announcement on Thursday. We're just kind of trying to speculate as to whether it's a 0.5%, a 1%. I mean, maybe a 0.25%, but I imagine that's probably off the table.
Yes, I would prefer one full percent, 100 basis points, given the extreme weakness in the economy and also the fact that inflation is going to fall rapidly over the next couple of months towards 2%. So I think the Reserve Bank should really consider the bigger cut rather than just the 25 or 50 basis point cut.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about inflation. We get CPI data next Wednesday. That will be for April. The 2% you mentioned there, I mean, that is below the bottom of that 3 to 6% range. And if we listen to the governor, he really kind of pegs on the middle of that range at 4.5. But inflation, I mean, demand has disappeared, to your point. No one's out there buying anything. Inflation really is at risk of going incredibly low. Great for consumers, those who've got jobs and out there spending, but a concern for the Reserve Bank.
Yes, I would think that should be a big concern, because my forecast is for next week's April number to be 3%, and then in May and June we are 2%. Now, of course, as you said, to very weak demand, so it's very difficult indeed for companies to pass on any cost increases that might come from the weaker currency. And apart from that, of course, the petrol price declines we've had in April and May. While that might not be sustained, the very weak economy, the weak demand will be with us for some time. And then the inflation rate around 2% is probably close enough to zero to be a big concern. In fact, I am very concerned that we're heading for deflation. The Japanese example is really top of mind. And in the global economy, around the global financial crisis, central banks have been very worried about that, and this is extreme circumstances for South Africa. So I think the Reserve Bank should be very concerned about low inflation like this. Like you said, very good for consumers, but if you're heading to virtually no inflation, that's not great for economic growth.
Yeah, and the issue with deflation, as I understand it, is that if I'm a consumer and I want to buy sort of a big ticket item or something, if there's deflation, I think to myself, you know what, hang on, if I wait 6 months, 12 months, I'll actually get it cheaper. And then deflation becomes almost that self-fulfilling prophecy where we're all just waiting because it's cheaper into the future.
Indeed, absolutely correct. And you know, that's such a great example, because economics is the study of human behavior. And that's what we do typically, and that's what happened in Japan. You keep on waiting for the lower and the lower and the lower price, and it becomes totally entrenched. And that's why Japan couldn't get rid of deflation on a permanent basis. And once you're there, it is so difficult to get out of it. As you get to lower and lower interest rates, it's very difficult to stimulate the economy on a permanent basis. So absolutely, the Reserve Bank is correct. It's not only up to them, it's also up to government to institute structural economic policy change. But still, for now, these are extraordinary circumstances, and the Reserve Bank should really come to the party, even if it's just for the short term, until government comes with policy change.
If we get that 1% that you think that you're talking of, that'll take the repo to 3.25%, it'll take prime to 6.75%. These are, to my data that I could find, record lows, certainly for prime and repo. They're there to stimulate, and it kind of works. But we've also still got that wiggle room, which, if we look around the globe, and fair enough, I'm looking at the more developed markets, looking around the globe, very much a sense of we've still got that space to cut, which actually affords us some luxury.
I do think that's true. We're still not at zero, and that provides the Reserve Bank with even more room. And my point about policy stimulus from the monetary side is, if you've got the room, keep on stimulating the economy. You can always take it back once there's any action on the economy front or worries about inflation coming through. You can always take it back. But for now, as I said, very extraordinary circumstances. They've got the room still compared to other central banks. So they should use it.
We'll leave that there. That's Johan Els, Chief Economist at Old Mutual. That's it for today. You'll find us live every morning, 6:30 on themoneyweb.co.za website or the MoneyWeb app. Podcast at the same places from 7 a.m. Also in your favorite podcast catcher. My thanks to our guests this morning and to Cordora and Eddie for helping put the show together. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.